And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of December 11th, 2020. Today, we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well, and I'm looking forward to discussing the MBTA's potential service cuts and why this matters for climate.
So, Mariah, there is a circumstance unfolding here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts that has to do with transportation, in particular with mass transit via something called the Massachusetts Bay Transit Authority, the MBTA. And I think it's worth describing the circumstances, what's going on, and the connection that it has to climate stuff, because I think there's a true underlying connection that may not be so obvious from the very beginning, but there you go. Anyway, here's the deal. In my humble opinion, any progress on climate or a true solution for climate has to provide some robust mass transit option for most people, right? It's going to be a low carbon way for people to get around, not only in urban centers, but you know, networked across the country. We talk about trains, we talk about all kinds of stuff, but we need transportation solutions because 30% of the carbon emissions in the state of Massachusetts come from the transport sector. Fine. We just say off to the side that there's something called the Transit and Climate Initiative, which is kind of a cap and trade deal cooking among the New England states. Pin that on the wall for a moment. That's out there. The MBTA, of course, since last March, has suffered a dramatic drop in ridership, right? Nobody wants to go. I will admit, I'm not enthusiastic about climbing on a train to go into town right now. So the everyone's working from home. All of the ridership has been enormously down. And what that means is that there's been a huge revenue drop for the MBTA. And for various, what I would consider political reasons, the MBTA has been saddled with a huge amount of debt, doesn't get a lot of money from the state. And in the circumstances where it sees a huge revenue drop, it has recently proposed big service cuts. And in particular, the kinds of service cuts that I think were enumerated were they're going to cut the ferry from across the harbor, which, okay, fine, they're going to do that. They're going to severely cut down on the commuter rail from out of town, particularly on the weekends and late at night, because nobody needs to ride a train late at night. But I think one of the most pernicious things that have been proposed is to cut certain bus lines and to reduce the overnight service on buses. So that the people who have to go and clean your hospital room on third shift won't have any effective way to get to the hospital, right? Those things are out there, and that has caused a bit of a stir. Mariah, you've been looking a little this up. Did I get any of that kind of right or wrong, or what's your take on that?
It's all right on. It's a tricky situation. I see both sides, right? I mean, I think that the MBTA, as you said, they have been cash strapped, and what are they supposed to do when no one's riding the train right now? Now, some of the pushback has been, well, look, there's a vaccine on the horizon. So why are you doing these cutbacks now when it's likely that as soon as the vaccine comes into play, you're going to have greater ridership? And you'll get back, you know, to where you need to be. And in fact, I don't even want to say you'll get back in the red, because I think one of the things I read is that they're not in debt right now, the MBTA. They actually are not in the red because of a variety of I think they got some help.
There's a huge amount of financial legerdemain to try and keep them in the black, right? And they go through these things. Yeah, but I think that the you're right. I mean, they have a fiscal responsibility, fiduciary responsibility to look at this stuff. I will say that as part of this discussion, the MBTA board, which there must be 25 different MBTA governing bodies that all get their oar in the water on this. But essentially, the MBTA has decided to postpone until next February the decision on these cuts. So that right now, as of mid-December, they've decided to postpone actually making these cuts. But it's only till next February, and they're still, everything's still on the table, right? These sort of, and I think that you're correct to say that there may be federal money coming, right? So in other words, there's this infusion of cash that might come from the federal government to try and support the MBTA through these hard times. And we think there's a COVID vaccine coming, which might help to recover some of this stuff.
Right. It's hard to really predict which way it's going to go, because sure, the COVID vaccine may come, but there's a lot of thought that people will not return to commuting back to work. Those who can continue to work from home may continue to do just that, even after there is a vaccine. It's sort of a new model that's been realized. Hey, wow, actually this does work, and it saves on office space that's needed, and it saves on electricity use for the office, and saves the stress of people driving back and forth. Of course, who this really affects is the large swath of people who we depend on to keep things moving, that depend on the train to keep them moving, right? All of the, you know, the nurses and the, you know, the caregivers and all of these different folks who maybe don't have a car or have always relied on the train or whatever it is to get to their job. And without how do we move forward?
Right. I mean, the COVID has basically ripped the scab off the idea that, I mean, the essential workers, in quotation marks, the most valuable people that we rely on, are also the people that are most disadvantaged by these kinds of cuts. It's just something that you see and have to recognize. And I would say the other uncertainty, Mariah, in addition to whether or not people will want to go back to their office, the question is whether or not, if you cut the transportation service, will people regard the MBTA as a reliable option and just decide they're not going to, you know, even if they do go to the office, they don't want to rely on the MBTA because there's not enough service, or they don't come back at night or something, right?
I mean, that's already a challenge that the MBTA deals with, right? There's a lot of complaints about trains not running, or trains getting canceled, or trains being slow. And this definitely would break the trust, right? If you've come to depend on this, you know, the train that you take or the ferry you take from back and forth, and all of a sudden it's canceled. So you may find a different way to get to work, and then you may not go back to the MBTA because they lost your trust, right? Yeah, and I think that's one of the big criticisms being leveled at this, is that, fine, you may say this is temporary, but it might affect you in ways that are much more long-term, and you might not be able to recover from them.
And so this is my argument. From a climate perspective, we don't have a long-term. Right? We need to be moving wisely towards good decisions that minimize carbon emissions. And I can't believe that a mass transit system does not fit into a robust climate solution for the state of Massachusetts. And so the idea that we're going to reduce service for a few years, and then by 2026 or 2027, maybe the ridership will be up. That's just not a working concept, as far as I can see.
Right, and I think the assumption is that if you don't have good public transportation, you have more single occupancy vehicles driving around, right? So therefore, you have more pollution. So we need public transportation. We need to use public transportation wherever possible.
And I guess it's this leads me to one of these fundamental questions that you don't often think about. But the question in my mind is whether or not mass transit is a commodity that you buy and use, and that the people who use the T pay for it, or is public transportation a common good that echoes back out to the rest of the state? And that is something that you pay, you know. So we've talked in past shows about there's certain cities in Europe where public transportation is free, right? You just get on the train and go somewhere, right? I mean, because that's how a city works. as opposed to a deal where you have to scratch up, you know, it used to be three quarters to get on the T. I'm sure it's much more now, right? The is it a public good or is it a commodity? I put it to you, Mariah. Is it a public good or is it a, can you tell me?
I wish I had the answer to that. I mean, I think it'd be great to have it be a public good, right? How nice to be able to just hop on and off the train and not have to pay for it. But someone has to pay for that. And where does that come from? I know that there's been a lot of people have taken this opportunity to say, well, this is the best time to raise the gas tax. And, you know, maybe you put some of that towards funding the MBTA. The reason they say this is a great time to raise the gas tax is, well, people are not driving very much right now. So, you know, and
price the fuel of gas prices, is low, therefore.
And, right, and price of gas is super low. So here's the time to do it. So that's, well, and, you know, there's that.
That's the TC, the concept of the TCI, or the Transportation and Climate Initiative, which would be to put a financial penalty on things like gasoline and then somehow use that money to build a just and equitable transit system, right? And that is not a bad idea. I think that people get really viscerally protective of their transportation. I think it's connected up to, you know, people's sense of their own freedom, right? If someone tells you you can't drive your car anymore, right? How many of us have had a aunt or a grandmother who wants to keep driving that car because it represents, you know, freedom? And I mean, from my mind, it's the same as people's fascination with horses 200 years ago, right? It's this power and mobility that you get. People don't want to give that up. So when you start talking about mass transit and penalties on gases, I mean, financial penalty on gas, on driving, people get really wound up about it. And it's a tough sell. I mean, but it's a direction that we need to go. And so somehow wise leaders need to guide us.
Yeah.
So I think that, I mean, the question of whether or not federal money will come to back up the MBTA, because some of the other questions are, why can't the state of Massachusetts, the state in the person of the legislature, put money into the MBTA to keep it afloat, right? And again, this comes back to, if it's a public good that we all benefit from, then our tax dollars, even if we never ride the MBTA, should go to keep that system running because it makes Boston a better place. Good question. Not a lot of, I mean, we should note that, yeah, not a lot of appetite for that on Beacon Hill. I'll just say in passing that those guys still have not put out the climate bill that we've been talking about. Here we are now mid-December, and these guys are still fooling around. So you can still call your state rep and tell them to get the climate bill out of committee. But we should just wrap things up by saying that I think that the question of transportation in a carbon constrained world, where does the city of Boston and the country want to be in terms of transportation in 10, 15, 20 years? 20 years from now is 2040, right? Not that far away when you're talking about these big mega projects of trains and highways and whatnot. We need to be including in those calculations climate issues, and they're not particularly well represented in the current discussion about the MBTA. But they're there nonetheless, whether or not people realize it or not. And as climate hawks, we should be putting our thumb on the scale in favor of the lowest carbon emissions path to get to a robust economy. Is that a fair way to say it, Mariah?
For sure.
All right. Well, we'll put it down there. We've got there's a bunch of links on this topic. It's hot, fairly hot right now. And you can read up on the various sides of this argument. Let us know what you think about it. We'll put the links at the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you want to tell us how much fun you have writing the T, send an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Since you're listening to this on your smartphone using one of the modern podcast distribution app, please tell your friends that they can listen to this podcast on their smartphone as well. I want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, thank you for taking this trip with me.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.